So our lessons this morning talk to us about martyrdom, about rage, and about being made into living stones, making faithful use of the building blocks of our lives. Another way to describe these two lessons is they are about our choices. Who and what do we want to be in this life? Who do we want to be in this life? And to help us explore that question, we begin with Stephen and his martyrdom. In the history of the church has often kind of romanticized the martyrs and how holy and wonderful they are, and then kind of just skate over the brutality of the events. So stoning was a lot like crucifixion in terms of it was ugly and deadly and horrific. And so you have to ask the question, what did Stephen do to elicit such rage from this Jewish council? Well, he was in Jerusalem preaching and was arrested for that, taken before the Sanhedrin, the great council. Although in this case, the council functions a whole lot more like a crowd, a mob. And he speaks to them of Jesus. But when you read his whole sermon, it's clear that he's really functioning like one of the ancient prophets. Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Hosea, Amos. He's challenging the religious leaders of the day to let go of their narrow, rigid, small vision of reality. Let it go, he says, and open your hearts to something new, expansive, and wondrous. The love of God that has come to us in the flesh. But this invitation, this challenge to let go, so threatens the council that they're infuriated. And in that environment, at that time, that leads to the stoning of Stephen. But lest you just think, well, that's all bad things that happened in the past, let me just talk to you for a moment about the panel I was part of last Sunday, Jewish, Christian, Muslim. So I've been told by a number of rabbis that if you're a Reformed rabbi or a conservative rabbi in the United States, the two largest groups of Jewish rabbis, you are not authorized to officiate at weddings in Israel. Because in Israel, it's the strict Orthodox group that makes all the rules and regulations about religious life. And I've wondered if a rabbi here went over to Israel and broke those rules and did a wedding, how rageful would some of those rigid folks be? And then in our own Christian community, we have a whole bunch of folks who are very, very rigid and narrow about life begins at conception. And there's to be no deviating from that line, no exceptions made, that's just the way it is. And if I went to speak before one of those groups, and I talked about how life to me is a whole lot more complicated, a whole lot more complex, and that human choices, women's choices, are very complicated around reproduction and around pregnancy. There can be no hard rules. You have to have an open mind and an open heart and listen. Don't you think there might be a whole lot of rage in that room? I remember quite vividly when I started in seminary, my first seminary, which was a very evangelical, conservative seminary, had many, many strengths and good things. One of the really good things was the New Testament department. The professors were really, in that context, pushing the edges. And one of the professors, one morning in class, there were 200 young men in the class, and he was trying to expand our understanding of the scriptures and talking about the possibility of women clergy, that this was a really biblical idea. And from the room, there slowly emerged this hiss and this booing. It wasn't loud shouting. It was just something deep and visceral, this booing and hissing from so many of these young students for whom this was a violently bad idea. And it was eerie sitting in the room with these folks, these young men who were pious, devout, faithful in so many ways, but somehow the professor had crossed a line and they just had this reaction. And it wasn't frightening in the sense they were going to do anything, but in a deeper way it was frightening because I thought I knew where I was, and all of a sudden I was somewhere else. That wrath was building right there. The Christian community. And then you turn to the Muslim community. And we have plenty of examples right now in our world, and the media portrays them. And it can be easy to be convinced. I was just talking to somebody this last week who was convinced that all Muslims are narrow-minded and dangerous, and they should not be here. But then you meet Rabe Elithi, an engineer from Egypt who's been here in the States for 25 years and who's taken on the task as a layperson to become a spokesman for his Muslim community here in town. And you encounter someone who's warm and expansive and thoughtful. So what all this tells me is that religion, at its best, is a source of strength, source of compassion, and a source of wonder. But religion can also become a source of what I might just call insanity, a source of rage. Stephen was martyred because he chose, there's that word chose, he chose openness and wonder in Christ, even in the face of religious fury. He was not going to be intimidated, he was not going to be silenced, and he was not going to be cajoled into conformity by what the Bible calls the powers of death. He was going to be faithful no matter what. We are to be like that in the choices we make. As Peter tells us, we're to be living stones built into the household of God, a holy priesthood. But here we live in a world where people of any religion or of no religion can choose to be people of hate, people of hurt, people of bigotry, people who are rigid and narrow. How are we enabled? How are we broken open to something more? Well, it's basically the word inspiration. We need to be inspired. That's what changes us. That's what opens us. That's what breaks us open. Think of Steve, who was just a regular guy, but encountered the apostles, and he was inspired by them. It changed his life. And then you think of the apostles and how they were inspired, literally breathed upon, which is what inspiration means, to be breathed upon, literally by the risen Christ, and sent out, sent free, sent forth, to be true to a deeper call. And then you have Paul, or who was known as Saul originally, who was a witness at the stoning of Stephen, even approving of this event. He was a Pharisee, a very knowledgeable, but narrow, rigid guy. He saw something, maybe in Stephen's words, in his vision, that changed him. And Saul kind of literally shed his skin and became Paul, released from his narrowness to become the apostle to the Gentiles, stretching the boundaries of the faith, becoming, in historical terms, the apostle of freedom, as he's often called, because that's his favorite word. People inspired by other people down through time. And then I got thinking about this, how I've been inspired by the faithfulness of this congregation, all of you, over these 28 years that I've been here. I've been with people who've had courage in the face of death and tragedy. I've been with people who are just curious in times of puzzlement, in times of, what are we going to do about this? And just inspired by the courage, by the curiosity, inspired by people of passion who say, we need to do this. We need to push this direction. inspired by people willing to take risks, sitting at church meetings and everybody taking a deep breath and saying, this might be hard, but we're going to do this. Inspired by humility, people who come together and we can't figure out a problem or an issue and we just sit with it. And then inspired by people of trust, when resources seem slim and yet you persist, you keep going. And then for me, I kept thinking that kind of at the core, at an archetypal level for me, I was inspired by my mom, by my mother. I wrote about this in the epistle this last month. I was brought up in a Catholic home out in Indiana. Catholics were a minority there. It was a very Protestant state. And I came home one day from my Catholic elementary school, parroting some words from the older kids who'd been standing at the fence, seen some other kids walking by, and they said, those are Protestant kids. Those are bad kids. They go to those churches. Those are bad churches. Those are bad people. And I went home and told my mom about that. I was just sort of intrigued. Who, you know, they're bad people. Who are these people? And suddenly my mom got this holy fire inside of her. This quiet burning in her eyes. It wasn't at all rage. It was really the other extreme. She just got very focused, very clear, very quiet, very calm. And she knelt down and looked me in the eye as she would do when she wanted to say something really important. And she said, there is to be no hate here in this family. There should be no hate in the world. And she told me about how hurtful it is when we create one group against another group and decide one group is wrong, whether you call them Catholics or Protestants or Jewish or African American. And then she said, each person is a child of God, is worthy of respect and honor. And there were words, but underneath the words, in a place too deep for words, I could sense this fire of love. That this, whatever God was, it had to do with this. This was God's way. And then I was inspired when she would take me to Mass. And there was a lot of, you could call it fol-de-rol, you know, all the ritual I didn't understand. And yet every so often there would be these moments when I would see, experience, feel this fire, this holy fire of love. And then when I got older and went to Quaker College and went to Quaker meeting, so different from Catholic worship. And yet there again, there was this holy fire deep down, this stillness, this quiet, this sense of dignity at the core of life. And then my wife, Tora, and I became part of a charismatic Pentecostal church for a while after college. And that was lively worship, speaking in tongues and all that. And yet the same experience of something still and holy and gracious at the core of things. And then eventually I made my way into United Church of Christ and our worship, following the still speaking God, this rainbow of humanity that weaves itself together, following in God's way, again and again and again, inspired each of these traditions. And I sit with Rabbi David, and I'm inspired. I sit with Rabbi Alethi, I'm inspired. It tells me that there's something here at the core of things that can break us open into a larger reality, and we human beings can be changed. So here's another way to say it. Our beliefs can fill us with rage at whatever infidel we've decided upon at that time. People who don't conform with our view of things. Our beliefs can weigh us down with guilt and shame because we're not good enough, we're not conforming enough. Or belief. Belief calls us into community, into communion, one with another and with the risen Christ, so that we can be inspired and set free, set aflame as God's beloved, to seek justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly. May that fire burn within us this day and always. Amen.